On this Friday afternoon, let's take a look at what happened in the commodity markets. Mike Zuzulow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Now, did trade change any in the day for you, or was it par for the course for the week?
No, it actually moved in the direction we were talking about, Todd, with the winter weather in the hard red wheat belt. That really came through after the midday models came out, and it reversed the thrusters of the bearish trend and caused quite a bit of short covering, allowing the hard red wheat to lead the soft red back up. And both of those contracts tried to regain steady on the week, but both of them did settle back just a little bit. March, Chicago, or I should say soft red wheat now, closed down about 2.25 cents. Corn followed, and then the soy followed after that with the short covering, but soybeans continue to be hampered by the meal not really wanting to come back around too much. January meal closed down about 4.6% or over $20 a ton. So that's something where the beans closed very much on the defensive this week, and the weekly bean chart support was violated. A major trend line that's been in place since 2006 was violated on a weekly close, and we also saw the weekly meal stochastics turn into a, quote, sell, unquote, signal with the short term crossing into the long term. So any more slippage from this week's lows, and I'll probably recommend some additional 2014 hedges at this point.
For soybeans only or for soybeans and corn?
No, just soybeans. You know, interesting to note about the corn, and this maybe is just weather, and this maybe is just the winter storm, and some of the ethanol, interior ethanol guys got a little bit nervous, but I saw that Linden jumped 21 cents today in their basis, so now they join Decatur at 15 over. Decatur up another nickel today, and Cedar Rapids remained unchanged at 18 over. So we're talking about near 440 cash right now when it comes to the cash market versus what the futures has been doing. So I'm going to let that play out a little bit here and see what the winter storm brings us as far as cash basis again early next week.
It gives credence to what Matt Bennett was telling us about the cash that producers are asking for, mostly from beans yesterday on the first couple of days of the new year as they start to put some money back into their bank accounts. I suppose they're wanting to leave the corn bins closed at this time.
I think that's right. I was interested because I didn't get to talk to you off air, but when we drove back over here to Indiana and Illinois this past week, you know, years like 2009 and big crop years that I've seen over the last 20 or so years, I'm used to seeing some pretty substantial ground piles like outside of Champaign at the Andersons, and that's because one, I drive next to it a lot, but I did not see much on the ground over there from 36. And so I wonder if we're not moving a lot of corn and the export market hasn't been doing its job of keeping the corn flowing very, very nicely, and therefore there's not a lot of backup at this point. And this is where the month of January gets pretty sticky, where the seller or the producer wants to get some cash flow needs met. Fortunately, this year the beans are still relatively high, so you can use that as a stop relief valve. But as you get into the end of the month, it's going to be interesting to see how the buyer and the seller work with one another and what happens as far as the basis in the futures market. And so I guess I'm still looking at a mindset that until I see a futures, quote, buy signal on that grain index chart, I'm going to leave my basis open. But as soon as I see that buy signal, I want to recommend locking in basis and then look for a futures recovery.
Yeah, so what you're telling me is that the level of movement of grain is enough to fill the pipeline easily enough for the most part. There are some basis places where that doesn't happen so well, but that it's not backed up any place so that you can see the grain. It's just all staying in the pipeline or, in this case, under storage in some form.
Exactly. It doesn't look like 2009 out there, and so I think that probably goes and helps the psychological standpoint of the producer. If he doesn't see the piles either, then maybe he sees it, and he sees the basis popping. And this was going on even before the snowstorm was being called for, that maybe that's an indicative that we really do have some good demand in the ethanol numbers. Even though the weekly ethanol numbers slipped a little bit this week, we're still drawing down our stocks, and we're still down over 5% in ethanol stocks versus last year at this time.
Mike, have you thought about the big picture? Sometimes you get some time over the holidays, if you can think about those, the larger picture of what the marketplace looks like, whether that be the global market or the national incomes, economics, what do you see?
That's a neat thing to talk about in a brief amount of time, because it seems like to me, Todd, you've got an inflationary bias brewing, and I've thought about this quite a bit with the Fed tapering coming earlier than the market expected, and that tapering starting now in the month of December. I think the market is heading towards an inflationary bias, and I think as long as we don't get into a major conflict, this year, 2014, is exactly 100 years ago from 1914 when we started World War I, and I've been sending information out to clients and subscribers about a lot of similarities, starting with what I put out on the seminars, but there's also been some writings going on by some other professionals that are talking about some big similarities to possibly being another World War I type atmosphere geopolitically. As long as we don't have that, I think the inflationary bias and the strong demand bias for the livestock sector, I mean, look at what feeder cattle did again this week. Mm-hmm. Look at what live cattle did again this week. We're talking about new record all-time highs. That can't be negative to the feed grain complex. So that's kind of the big picture, a quick and dirty story.
Well, on that story, do you see if there's an inflationary bias, it's all about income and what you can purchase with a dollar,
right,
in particular. So do you see the price of commodities slipping even if the price of commodities are higher? Do you understand what I mean?
So no, go ahead and explain that a little bit more.
Say it went up 10%. So if you were at $10, that would be another dollar. So you'd be at $11, but it would only be worth it. That $11 would only buy you $10 of other goods.
Yeah, no, I think there's a level that the commodities can rally to, because one of the things that I've done a lot of research on, and it's coming to fruition, is that versus 30 years ago, livestock feeding is night and day in terms of how we feed, what type of feed we use. And so price changes, that elasticity of the price change in commodities makes a big difference. That price change at the meat counter for the person in the United States and the person in China makes a bigger difference than it did 30 years ago, because it's a bigger portion of your disposable income, especially over there in the developing countries. And so you do have to put a limit on the upside potential in commodities under that inflationary bias. I think the big thing I'm trying to associate is the monetary policy of the central banks not really letting inflation into the market, pushing commodity prices down. Now with the taper, they're probably going to have to increase their money supply. Wages are probably going to go up. That's the kind of inflation that investors like, and they'll stop talking about deflation and commodities being negative. They'll actually look at that, I think, as a good asset diversification in their portfolio again.
Oh, so overall, you're friendly, the marketplace, relatively speaking, to it, net income.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, I think that if the global economy is going to heal, you're going to recouple the global trade and the Wall Street and the strong moves in Wall Street and the low bond prices. Those things will recouple and actually help the commodity market in 2014, whereas the regulatory issues and the deflationary issues of what the Federal Reserve and other central banks were trying to do, 95% of quantitative easing 2 and quantitative easing 3 never hit the American public. It was held by the banks that the Federal Reserve has, the power over. So that's probably going to start to unwind.
And finally, can you set the stage for me for next week's USDA report? Start with the grain stocks numbers.
I think the grain stocks numbers are going to be much, much more important to the corn trader than it is going to be the bean trader, because the beans have a premium in them with strong demand. So corn stocks are going to be extremely important in terms of the trader psychology in terms of contrasting that with the January 10th crop report. I would flip that over and say that you probably have a much more important January 10th supply-demand report for the beans, because we'll get an idea, I think, Todd, of what the Argentine and Brazilian production is going to be. And if they hike that production number, it takes away the potential bullishness of the U.S. supplies here. So I think this is where that transition may be starting, where the spreads start to give way and the front end loses to the new crop. And that's not indicative of a healthy market. So that's the big thing to watch next week for the soybeans.
Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas.